Blog Talk Radio.
Covering today in search of Agent Tour number 5, Soul being an acronym for S70, oldest or original, U, universal L laws, which are alluding to the 7 universal axiomatic teachings called the 7 Noahide commandments, which were the original axiomatic means of the whole human race to have a bona fide, true, relevant and important relationship with the Most High and in communion with between human being and human being. I'd like to state them tersely, and then we'll bring on our co-host, one of our co-hosts. Number one, not to blaspheme the Creator with one of the Creator's names. Number two, not to serve idols. Number three, not to commit premeditated acts of murder. Number four, not to commit adultery. Number five, not to eat the limb of an animal while still alive. Number six, not to steal. Number seven, to raise up righteous statutes in every land according to the Most High's plan, and also to be included in the spirit. And the actual application of the 7 commandments is to educate human beings about their roles as about being human. Joining me today, and I think I have him on the air, is a promoter, elucidator, lover of the teachings of the God Reflex by Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Dennis Ryan, somewhere on the planet Earth. Dennis, how are you doing this morning?
Very good, Don. Yourself?
Good, very good. And I just want to mention, everyone, we opened up the show with some ancient-sounding music, meaning it was music provided solely on a harp. And I believe the artist's name is Michael Levine. And he has been working on for years now on this type of music to try to recapture a sound which is not involved in plugging a guitar into 50,000 watts of some sort of amplifier, but trying to actually play music, which is bringing us back to another time and place to relax the human condition with more pleasant-sounding melodies. And with that being said, Dennis, we talked about last week about the idea of sharing with people viewpoints based on 48 attributes, which were listed in a teaching in the Ethics of Our Father, Perkei Avos. And last week we talked about attentive hearing and learning. And as I turn to the page that we'll be referencing to, I'll ask you to chime in on it. I believe I mentioned to you, so to speak, gave you a homework assignment to elucidate what the Rambam would say about the following two qualities. Let's just get there. Please bear with me, everyone. Here we go. This week, Dennis, we want to start off the show by talking about the idea of, as we say, barichut savotayim, the idea of a person being mindful of how they express themselves, and also binat halev, the understanding of their heart. So let me ask you, Dennis, did you see anything in Rambam's Guide to the Perplexed that address this idea of how a person should speak and how a person can access the understanding of their heart?
On page 263 of the Guide to the Perplexed, we have words that address that subject matter. So let me read them, okay?
Sure. Take your time.
Okay. Yeah. Thus God said, or thus God says, who gave a mouth to man? That's from Exodus. And the prophet declared, the Lord hath given me a learned tongue. That's from Isaiah. This gift, therefore, which God gives us in order to enable us to perfect ourselves, to learn, to teach, must not be employed in doing that which is for us most degrading and perfectly disgraceful. We must not intimidate the songs and tales of ignorant and lavacious people. It must be suitable to them, but it is not fit for those who are told, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and holy nations. That's Exodus. Those who enjoy the faculty of thinking and speaking in service of that sense, which is no honor to us, who think more than necessary of drink and love, or even sing of these things. They employ and use divine gifts in acts of rebellion against the giver, that's giver with a capital G, and in the transgression of his commandments. To them the following words may be applied, and I multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Quote from Hosea. I also have a reason and cause for calling out language, the holy language. Do not think it is exaggeration or error of my part. It is perfectly correct. The Hebrew language has no special name for that organ of generation in females or in males, nor for the act of generation itself, nor for semen, nor for secretion. The Hebrew has no original expressions for these things, and only describes them in a figurative language, and by way of hints, as if to indicate thereby that these things not be mentioned and should therefore have no names. We ought to be silent about them. For that purpose, for some suitable expressions, although these are generated used in different sense.
So, what do you think someone who is listening to this, because, you know, we live in a world where as long as a person has a tongue and teeth and five articulate organs connected to the mouth, it seems that if they can freely speak, they can speak freely about anything they want. That doesn't seem to be what the Rambam is talking about. I think he's talking about a certain type of focus and dedication, and ultimately, for any person who chooses to, dedication of the usage of the human blessed faculty of speech. I mean, you know, if we were to go to a hospital, we wouldn't see a doctor using his scalpel to cut a slice of pizza for himself from a pie that him and his friend just ordered. So, too, the tongue and the teeth and the mouth, the palate, the jaw have all been created for a certain purpose. And unfortunately, people have forgotten about that purpose. But it seems that my take on what you just shared with me is that the Rambam's reminding us that the, again, the blessing to communicate through the mouth and all the articulate organs that are associated with it should be used for a specified purpose. Do you like that? Elaborate on that, Dennis.
Well, I think what the Rambam is saying here is that it's a gift, and don't abuse it. In other words, use it properly and correctly. don't use it where it hints or smacks of something on the negative or a devilish type of basis. We want to use it in its purity as the speech has been given to us, because that's how we honor God, by praising him, and that's part of our speech. We also honor it by speaking to other people, but how we speak and what reference we are responsible for. Therefore, do not go about it as though it's free willy and you can say anything that you want to. You are responsible for what comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, and we do see too, as we're going to hopefully see in a couple minutes, is that when the Most High speaks, his initial acts were to manifest creative, teeming, flowing manifestations to the creation. To this day are still flowing. So I think it's also indicative of the power of speech, that what a person said yesterday is not just gone, you know, forever. In fact, it could have a lingering effect. Of course, our speech is not going to be like Hashem, you know, God's speech. But we should understand that it could last. I mean, if sometimes we talk with other people and we ask them, can you remember a certain point in your life where you made a change? Remember a significant point in your life? Many times, the point that assisted another person way back, going back a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, was that they heard someone say something which affected them in a certain way that actually made a profound change in their life. It was a catalyst for change. Dennis, before we continue, I want to just bring in our other co-host. Ron, is that you?
Good morning. I'm so sorry I'm late, but I guess better late than never. Good morning, Don and Dennis Ryan is on.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Dennis.
We have Ron Williams, our Ben Nock scholar, and advocate, or good human being. You know, Ron, you say better late than never. Well, I'll just remind you, next time you come over for dinner, we'll leave you some crumbs after we eat the full meal.
Don't mind, I have a very small appetite, but that would be just fine.
Okay. Ron, Dennis and I opened up today's show, which again is class number 85, in search of authentic Torah number 5. The idea of two attributes that is talked about in Perkei Avos, basically number one, we didn't get to the second matter the person should strive for. We just were talking about the idea of how a person should be orderly and be careful in how they express themselves. And Dennis brought out a very deep and very focused teaching by Maimonides Rambam on the idea one should avoid using the tongue for things which are not, how should we say, we should avoid frivolous descriptions of certain parts of the body and to recognize that speech is a gift. As a Noahide, what is the importance for Noahides learning to sanctify the speech and to see the higher purpose in just, you know, just pronouncing words and sentences, phrases and expressions, and to realize that their speech can actually aid themselves and others to serve Hashem, to serve the Almighty?
First and foremost, the basic our expression and word normally is a reflection of thought, and a reflection of thought is exactly who we are, basically, as thinking human beings. So the way we express ourselves through word is exact. This will give others an idea of who we actually are. We also have to remember that the Creator revealed his thoughts, so to speak, when he created the world using the faculty of speech. We also have to be wary that our words can actually be used as weapons, not only to hurt others, but also ourselves. So we should be deliberate in speech, but we should be deliberate in speech as is with our thought, our thinking. Also, for a Noahide, we are allowed to bring basically one sacrificial offering, which is called the the Korban Ola, the burnt offering, and the time to the temple, and hopefully with the rebuilding of the temple, when sacrifice is reinstated, Gentiles, which Ben Noach and Ben Israel will be able to sacrifice again. But that's also an atonement for the thought process. So Ben Noach, we, with our bad thoughts have to be atoned for. It's not just you have a bad thought and it goes away and that's it. We should strive to adjust our thoughts to that which is positive, and that would be reflected in our speech.
Mm. Beautiful. I just want to bring out too that you brought up a good point that you know, our speech is reflected of our thoughts, and it's a matter also about, you know, a person starting to feel and get a sensitivity to, and this is going to ultimately tie into what the next attribute we'll be talking about, gentlemen, in a minute or so, the understanding of the heart. The idea that a person can, in fact, be in control of their thought process. Now, what that involves is basically understanding that there was a thought process that preceded our thought process, and that was basically the Most High's thoughts, which again are not our thoughts, which manifested in a way not like we manifest our speech, but into divine speech. So there were, so basically the ability to speak and to speak simply in a relevant way, in a positive way, in a competent way, is basically, first of all, person being mindful of their thoughts. And so let's say something negative or not positive pops into the mind, a person can ask themselves, is this thought fitting for someone like myself, a bearer and a possessor of that divine image, to carry this thought for another second, or can I just drop it, like say a person is reaching into the, is at the fruit market and is looking through the fresh fruit, so they want to buy a bunch of apples, and they reach for an apple which on one side seems to be nice and juicy looking, and then they reach over to the, and they grasp it, and they say, well, it's actually soft and turning brown, and it looks like it's rotting, and they just drop it. And the fact that a person encounters a negative thought is not indicative of the fact that the person now is on the deterministic path of hell, but rather that, you know, it could have been that there are other people in his environment, or there could be something a person saw, say like an image side of a bus, or in a subway, or a billboard. And it generated a type of negative reaction in the person, as opposed to a person just, so to speak, you know, when we walk through the streets in our communities around the world and we breathe air, we don't take to consider that perhaps the air is more clean in this part of the city or the other part or in the countryside. We just continue to breathe. So to witness, our thoughts are in constant flow, like the air that we inhale. And I think what a lot of people get troubled by is that when they get a negative thought, they either try to wrestle it, like you would wrestle a bear, which is not a very easy thing to do, or they just become docile to it and let it just dominate them, and they become infatuated with that wrongful thought, or they can take the approach, which is mentioned in Chassidus, which is called askafia, which is basically sublimation. Like, oh, okay, I have the thought, it's not fitting for me. This is a beautiful chance for me to show to the Creator that I do believe in His providence, that He provided me this negative thought, for me to reach back one more time into my thought process and have a positive thought, instead of focusing on the negative thought, to grasp onto that positive thought. And lo and behold, we will probably find more times than not that when it comes to the next time we express ourselves to other people, we're speaking in a positive manner and not following the flow of that. Of that negative thought. So I just want to mention something else, gentlemen, and I would love to hear how you gentlemen react to it, is that there's a teaching in the Talmudic tractate of Tainis, which is basically the oral Torah tradition of the customs that Israel engages in when we engage in fasts, you know, days where we don't eat, which which we have about 6 days of the year that we don't eat, to get involved in a day-long effort to repent to the Most High, that in this Talmudic tractate of Tainus, which is in the seventh page on the first side, it said that words of Torah cannot be maintained or fulfilled except for someone who is basically of lowly spirit. And that doesn't mean someone who has low self-esteem, but basically they are the type of person that contemplates this level of awareness of Hashem, that no matter what you see in the world or in the heavens, seven levels of what we call the firmaments, that nothing is in comparison to the Most High, and that a person recognizes that they've been given the gift of life, and that they realize they have limitations, and not only that, everything outside of Hashem, the Creator, has limitations. So what happens is the person develops a sort of movement, a spiritual, emotional, intellectual movement within themselves, that they want to nullify themselves to that sense of super being, creator, who, in fact, will allow us to access some sort of awareness of him one step at a time. And with each step we take, we're moving closer to him, and at the same time we're moving closer to him, there's this level of him which is way beyond us. So we get elevated in this process, but at the same time that we feel lowly, again, I want to emphasize, not in the negative way, but in the way of realizing I'm just one creature in this vast, expanding universe, but yet still I have the opportunity to grow. But as I go, I should realize I shouldn't become anything more than what I am, which is this one particular speck or collection of molecules. Dennis, have you heard this type of thinking before?
Yes. There's an old human expression that has been echoed many times throughout history. And it's a very simple expression, and it goes like this. Count your blessings. In other words, from time to time, you must take inventory of yourself, your own being. You must realize what you have, be it ever so small or be it ever so large, but what you have is yours, and you must be grateful for what you have, and you must answer the Lord in a way that you thank him for what you have. And this is a form of humility that must take place whether you're feeling good or feeling bad. Why? Because it's what you are, and it's facing the reality of your life. Count your blessings. They mean something, especially to you.
Ron, any point you'd like to share with us?
Just a teaching I came across this morning, which I read before, but this morning I gave a little bit more attention to. It's in actually the Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of the Fathers, and it was by the sage Ben Zoma. He said, who's wise? One who learns from every person. Who's strong? One who subdues his evil inclination. Who's rich? One who's happy with his lot. Who's honored? One who honors others. And also there's another teaching here that I feel in the beginning of Dan, what you were saying, I think this explains a little bit of that. It's also in Pirkei Avos by Rabbi Hananiah ben Dosa, and he said, whenever a person's fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. But when a person's wisdom comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. And there are the commentaries on that. And it says, this concept is also accepted by philosophers. For when the regular exercise of refined qualities precedes wisdom, and a firm habit is established, the wisdom that the person learns afterwards will encourage him to maintain these positive attributes. Mm-hmm. This in turn will motivate him to intensify his connection with wisdom, inspiring him with love and enthusiasm for it, for this encourages an ingrained habit.
When, by contrast, bad tendencies are ingrained before one learns wisdom, the wisdom that one learns creates a conflict for it, and it prevents the person from indulging his desires in which he's been accustomed, and this will cause him to see wisdom as a burden and to abandon it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Gentlemen, I'd like to segue now to this second attribute that hopefully all of us are aiming for. I think both you gentlemen are. I'm aiming for it, and we invite everyone else who has a divine image, which is every human being upon the planet Earth, to engage in this type of reasoning, to try to attain and internalize, and after internalizing it to whatever level a person is blessed to internalize, to share it with other human beings, the idea of the understanding of the heart. Dennis, did you see anything from Rambam's teaching?
Yes, I do, but first of all, I'd like to quote Proverbs 8-17. I love them that love me, and those that seek me earnestly shall find me. Very, very deep and heavy, because it's talking about what is the basis of love. But at the same time, we have here on page 314 in the Guide to the Perplexed, and this is how it goes. There are other truths in reference to the whole of the universe, which form the substance of various and many kinds of speculative sciences, and afford the means of verifying the above-mentioned principles and their final result. I'm sorry, I skipped over that. But Scripture does not so distinctly prescribe the belief in them as it does in the first case, and that is, it is implied in the commandment to love the Lord, which comes from Deuteronomy, may be inferred from the words, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with thy heart and with thy soul, and with all thy might, which also comes from Deuteronomy. What stress is laid on this commandment to love God? We have already shown in the Mishnah Torah that this love is only possible when we comprehend the real nature of things and understand the divine wisdom displayed therein.
Beautiful. I just want to chime in with that if a person's engaged in the act of positive commandment of loving the Almighty, how could they be involved in an act of idolatry? How could they be involved in the act of adultery? How could it, because that would be a dissing of one of the creatures of the Most High, namely another human being. How could a person want to be involved in premeditated acts of murder? Ron, what's your take on this? The idea of the understanding of the heart.
Okay, I have the Ethics of the Fathers also with the Hasidic commentaries, and on that understanding of the heart, it actually refers to it as meditation of the heart. It's written a little bit differently there. And actually, I'm glad you wrote it in that fashion, because it gave me a new perspective on the meditation of the heart. And I have in front of me the Divine Code, written by Rabbi Moshe Wiener. This book is specifically written for the Bnei Noach, the descendants of Noach, all the children of the world, all the peoples of the world. It says here, what is this love and fear? When a person understands that God is the creator of everything and keeps everything in existence every moment, and this is an understanding where we have to constantly meditate, and we have to try our best to make it actually real, because everything around us appears to be basically been created, and it just keeps running on its own. And it's our understanding, because when we interact with creation, we rarely change its form from one to another, and it remains. And many of us sometimes get fooled by this and imagine that the world was created and it just remains on its own.
And we have to constantly remind ourselves that everything is being created constantly. And when you're constantly focused on this, then you start, things fall into perspective in terms of who we are and that creator who's actually keeping everything going. And there is where we start to feel that lowliness, that who are we compared to him? We can't even dare think of comparing ourselves to him for what he has created. Mm-hmm. And that's the fear aspect of it. And the love aspect of it is the fact that he is continuously doing this for us and for our sake, not for his. And there is where we have to realize that the tremendous love he has for us, even though we do not recognize him or we do not pay proper respect to him, he still continuously does this for us every single day faithfully. And I think that is what should inspire that love that we should have for our Creator.
Beautiful. That being said, I'd like to tie in also with a Hasidic perspective on this idea of understanding of the heart, and it also ties back to this idea of shiflut, of lowliness or bittul, self-nullification, based on a statement that's made at the end of our liturgy in our Jewish prayers, in the end of the what is known as the Shmona Esrei, literally the prayer of 18 blessings that we say three times a day. And the statement goes as follows: "And my soul should be like dust to all." And then it concludes, it says, "Open my heart to your Torah," divine instruction. So we see that the key to opening up the sensitivities of the heart are in fact directly related to that sense of bittul, nullifying ourselves, and in a related teaching, when I say nullifying ourselves to a higher state of consciousness, a higher purpose in life, a higher sense of dedication, that there's actually a Talmudic tractate in Eruv in which deals with the laws of how to keep Shabbos on a certain level, which we won't go into details right now, by enclosing a certain property area that people can carry because we're not allowed to carry on the Shabbos. That it says that basically the teaching is that if a person makes himself like a desert, that anyone can tread on it, that the Torah that one is learning, divine instruction one is gathering in, it will actually be maintained. So I'm looking at that word, gentlemen, and it says kamidbar. That word midbar means desert, but also in that word midbar is also another Hebrew word, medaber, like a speaker. So what I'm reading into it, gentlemen, again, this is not in the book that I'm reading from, but my own, so to speak, little cyberspace Torah activist viewpoint to try to encourage people, that if a person makes him like a person, like a speaker, like a human being, because that's what really distinguishes us. One of the things that distinguishes us as human beings is that we are speakers and communicators in a way that animals do not communicate on our level of sophistication, is that when we use our speech in a way that everything that passes by us will, so to speak, walk over us, meaning we're not going to allow all the negative speech, all the negative type of mentalities, just, you know, to be internalized by us. We just, so to speak, pass over us or walk over us, you know, to have a firm resolve to stick to principles which, as we learn about, are really eternal principles, faith in the Most High, loving Him and fearing Him, and having a sense of purpose on life. Then we shouldn't be surprised that as we gain more and more access to Torah teaching, that they will actually be maintained within ourselves. And the beauty is that, you know, once you've retained something, you can share it with other people. And after you share with other people a Torah teaching, you don't forget it. In fact, it becomes more ingrained in your consciousness. So I'd like to ask you, gentlemen, have you found that as you share teachings of profundity with other people, in fact, you can testify, you don't forget it. In fact, it becomes more a part of your consciousness. Dennis, what's your take on that?
What happens is, to love your neighbor means not only to act nice to them or show that you don't treat them as an enemy, but also to share what you have. And one of the gifts that we have is our gift of intellect. So if we know something and we share it with other people, it's another form of love thy neighbor. But at the same time, we're trying to help them, and may they benefit from what we know and understand. So by preaching, by talking, you're passing along what you know, and you're enhancing the belief that you believe in because you're sharing it with other people. And this is recognized by other humans when they think that you're not trying to sell them something, but you're actually giving them a little piece of your mind. It's not a present. It's not a gift. They can take it or leave it. But it's an offering to your fellow man as another form of love. So sharing has a basis for love. Sharing is also gratifying to the person who's sharing, because then you are not the only recipient of the wisdom that you have accumulated, but you're actually distributing it, hoping that it plants the seeds somewhere. Yesterday, I was talking to a small congregation of very young people in their late teens, early 20s, up in the North Bronx, and I was just talking about life and what you must worry about as becoming an adult, and how you must continue constantly communicating with God as you go through life, because the intellect he gave you is the one that's going to help you survive. And if you survive, that means you have to communicate with him so that you know where you are going. So yes, sharing to me is a very important part, because that's why we have libraries. Libraries are there for everybody to share. It's a common thing. We had the most famous Library of Alexandria that had all the important books of the world. It burned down. That sharing stopped. Humanity got hurt on that one. But we believe in sharing. We just don't emphasize the word.
Beautiful. Ron, what about your experiences as you share a teaching? It seems to come closer to you, and you seem to come closer to it.
It's fortunate and unfortunate, but I only basically, these teachings I more or less share with my direct relatives that I'm in close contact with. As for outside of that circle, I rarely communicate with other people besides the people I work for and with. But one thing I'd like to extend upon that is that the way we behave many times teaches others how to behave. And when that wisdom has helped you to refine yourself and you act in that fashion towards others, even though you may not verbally express this to them, you become an example to them how to behave. And you see little by little that a change starts taking place. And this, I would like to reiterate one more time, that this is with deliberate, being deliberate at what you do, because then you take note of your actions and you know that others are watching you, and you do your best in accordance with what you've learned so far. And as you observe others around you, you see that they also start reacting and acting in the way you respond to them or the way you act generally. So that also becomes a form of sharing and teaching, but just in an indirect way, but very effective, as it's written here in the Fundamentals of Faith in the Divine Code. Every person by nature is influenced by his friends and surroundings, and by nature he's drawn after those around him to also act in their ways. Therefore, everyone must befriend good people to learn from their worthy actions and distance themselves from bad people in order not to learn from their bad actions. As King Solomon said in Proverbs 11:13-20, he who walks with the wise will become wise, while one who associates with fools will suffer. Actually, he didn't say become a fool, but suffer, because when they commit their acts of not thinking, what happens is a lot of people get hurt by it. And it also reminds us that we should not indulge in foolishness, because the suffering we bring is not only always to ourselves, but also to those around us.
Mm-hmm. Very beautiful. Okay, gentlemen, before we go on to the verses in Genesis.
Don?
Yes, Don.
Don?
Yes.
I have a little excerpt here I'd like to say over Rambam on page 385 at the bottom. Is that okay?
You are free to excerpt with us.
Thank you. So the Rambam says, thus scripture says, unto these it was shown that the mightiest know that the Lord, he is God. Deuteronomy. Know therefore this day, and consider in thine heart that the Lord is God. That's also from Deuteronomy. Know ye that the Lord is God, from the Psalms. Thus the Lord distinctly states that the highest kind of worship to which we refer in this chapter is only possible after the acquisition of the knowledge of God. For it is said, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with your soul, that's Deuteronomy, and we shall have shown several times man's love of God is identical with his knowledge of him. Divine service enjoined in these words must, accordingly, be preceded by the love of God. Our sages have pointed out to us that this is a service in the heart, which explains, I understand to mean this, man concentrates all his thoughts on his first intellect and is absorbed in these thoughts as much as possible. David therefore commands his son Solomon these two things, and exhorts him earnestly to do them, to acquire true knowledge of God, and to be earnest in his service that the knowledge has been acquired.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you. Well, I this kind of ties into the idea of getting the knowledge and then incorporate into the service of the Most High. It basically, gentlemen, and those of you listening out there, it involves a dedication to focus. And this focus has a term which corresponds in the Lashon HaKodesh, the Holy Tongue, Hebrew. It's called Hamakat HaDat. Now, a person's focus, or Hamakat HaDat, is according to the sensitivity or the talent that he or she is blessed with for the essence of something they're connecting to. And from the inner dimensions of Torah, that this actually sensitivity to the essence of a concept is actually embedded within a quality of the human skull. That's right, our noggin, as we say, on the street, you know. And basically, we also know from scientific studies, unfortunately, where children, human beings, are in various parts of the world where they do not have access to enough calcium or vitamin D rich human food substances, it can actually cause a lack of development of the human skull, which is bone, and therefore the lack of development of the human skull actually impedes on the cognitive development of that human brain, which unfortunately, which is not getting enough nutrients in the form of vitamin D for the skull. So the skull is actually a refractor of sensitivity. But what type of sensitivity is being refracted through the skull? Well, there's a Hasidic teacher, his name is Rav Hillel Meir Parach, he lived from about 1795 to 1860, who went into the mechanics of human meditation based on the teaching of the second Lubavitch Rebbe, Rav Dov Ber Lubavitch, and he talked about the root of a person's cognitive activity within the context of analytical study or meditation that you touched upon early in the show, Ron, is actually dependent on the quality of connection a person has in their left brain thinking as it's pertinent to the inner points of a person's heart, which is called the understanding of the heart. And we do know that in modern psychology as well, modern psychology has identified there is not just an emotional capacity in the human heart, but there's actually an intellectual quality within the human heart, and one of them is in this concept called understanding of the heart, which is basically, Rav Hillel explains, this is basically the inner reasoning and delight, which actually is concealed within the essential point of a person's heart, where a delight in perceiving things takes place. And it's called basically an Oneg Posh Bilti Morkov Klal. It's basically an uncomplicated, uncompounded delight, which is basically ultimately connected to the person's very own blessed soul. Along with that, in the human heart, the understanding of the heart, there's a focus factor. And we talked about just now a couple moments ago this idea of the focus factor being in a person's brain, mind, getting some sort of empowerment through the human skull, which is connecting to what I just mentioned now, the sense of delight in the human heart. And this is called literally Bina Liba, again, understanding of the heart. And this level within the human heart actually empowers a person to strip away his or her thought process from other thoughts, but just to think into the particularities of the intellect or the concept they're going into that are relevant to the person's desire to go deeper into the concept. And a person who can do that, who can, at the time they're engaged in some sort of spiritual learning, it could even apply to their involvement, they're trying to make some sort of breakthrough in the realm of physics or science, health, social services, the person's success, to the greatest possible extent they are conscious of their efforts to only think about one thing at that particular point in time, will relate to how much success they have, in fact, coming up with a new concept and internalization of that concept, and then having the ability to share that concept with other human beings. So I know I went a little bit deep on you, gentlemen. I didn't expect it, but I just thought it would be relevant to share with you, gentlemen, and other people listening in, that such ideas are coming from the inner dimension of Torah, which has nothing to do with anything except for the fact of communicating to human beings. It's worth their while to look into this vast ocean of the concept of the understanding of the heart. Anyone like to make any comments before we start to go into the chapter 1, verse 21 of Genesis?
Yes. Humans were created by God, and we are beautiful things, believe it or not. And one thing that we are aroused, or that piques our interest, or heightens our awareness, which goes to our hearts again, is that when somebody gives you a gift. Now, when we were young kids, we were given gifts for birthdays and other reasons, whatever the case may be, and it sort of gladdened our heart, and we felt good. It became an emotional moment from a human viewpoint. Well, the same can be said if you receive a mental gift. If you receive a mental gift that was freely given, yeah, in some cases you had to pay for the gift, so what? If you acquired it, you felt good that you learned something, or you could add something to your body of knowledge that you didn't have before. So we tend to be grateful from a human viewpoint. So anything that's given, and once we accept it, there's an exchange of the heart. And to me, that's significant, even though sometimes people do it methodically, they still have to appreciate what is given.
Beautiful. Ron, anything you'd like to say before we move on to the verses?
No, actually, let's head straight in.
Okay, so let's go right into it. We've got about 11 minutes to go. So chapter 121, we're in the beginning of the creation. It's the fifth day of creation, and we're dealing with the Most High's ecosystem, which is a term that people are developing more of an awareness of as we try to, as human race, try to deal with the dilemmas of pollution and lack of clean resources. But we have to go back in time and remember who created these resources and what type of creatures were created. So chapter 1, verse 21, it says, "And God created the great sea giants and every living being that creeps, with which the waters teemed after their kinds, and all winged fowl of every kind, and God saw that it was good." Very interesting, gentlemen, and in a moment I'd like to get your take on it. Why do you think that Hashem chose to communicate to Moses because Moses wrote down these teachings, and I'm sure Adam and Hanoch and Methuselah and Noah and all the ancients knew about these things. But why do you think so clear that the beginning of the Torah, after we learned about the luminaries and the heaven and earth, that we should know that the great sea giants, meaning the whales, and the smallest bug creeping upon the earth, along with the birds, were created by him, and the Most High saw that it was good. Dennis, what's your take on this? Why we have such a disparity from, on the one end we've got the whales, on the other hand we've got the bugs crawling upon the earth. Yes, go ahead.
You take a whale eats the smallest creature in the sea called a krill. It is good because there's an ecological circle that's going on here, and it's self-sustaining. It is good because it is Mother Nature at its best, going through its cycles, not being interfered with man. But you originally said we're worried about the ecology somewhere. I think there's a growing awareness among humans today that we may have missed something. In other words, God gave us almost a perfect world to live in. But we have done things that have disrupted or interfered with. And certain things in our future we have to worry about because scientists say it's not a positive thing. Now, if God said it's good, and some of these scientists saying that we have to worry or fear about the future, there may be something missing between God saying it's good and the earth we're living on today. So we actually have some people who have a conscience and are worrying. Did we do something wrong? Did we misuse something? Are we forgetting about nature? So we have a revival that's coming through, trying to get back what God meant. It is good.
Beautiful. Ron, any take on this verse?
Not really, no.
Okay, so let's go to the next verse.
I just take for granted that when the Creator says it's good, then it is good. And His word stands forever. His word stands forever in the heavens. As a result, that will keep it being good. That's it.
Okay, and if He says it's good, it's good. No pun intended. That's just really good stuff to know. Okay, let's go to the next verse. And this is interesting.
Don?
Just as
an afterthought, we don't question God, and we don't try to figure out why He says things, because we believe and we have faith. So if God says it's good, it is good. There's no question involved.
Right. Now, we've already witnessed in this previous verse that the Most High created the great sea giants and every living being. Then verse 22 starts very interestingly, and I think many people, you know, pass by this verse in Genesis and don't contemplate on the implications of what's being said here. Let's just read the verse simply. So chapter 1, verse 22, God blessed them, meaning that which He created, the teeming living creatures, which were mentioned, and the fowl, which were mentioned in verse 20, and the sea creatures and everything that creeps upon the earth. And God blessed them, saying, quote, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas, but the fowl shall increase on the earth. Now, gentlemen, everyone is very aware of the fact that man was told to be fruitful and multiply. But here we see that the Most High actually blessed the creatures to be fruitful and multiply. Now, why do you think, and I have the answer in front of me, so, my hands are a little stacked, but I'm just, from the perspective of reasoning, why do you think the Most High had to give a commandment to the animals? I mean, if He created them, why does He have to command them to be fruitful and multiply? Dennis, what's your take on this?
My take is that everything created by God is blessed and is built into a system of the living to recreate itself. Everything God created in the world of nature is recreating itself if it was living in the first place. And He set that system up. Therefore, whatever happens will happen, and it's part of nature. We cannot question what He did. We can only appreciate it, because if you have enough faith, and you believe, you can accept. And that acceptance is very important. We don't care sometimes how it's worded, because it may have been worded for people who didn't have a understanding or people who weren't educated. But it had to be explained to them in some type of human word. So we believe and we have faith. The word is not going to deter us one way or the other.
Ron, your take on this?
Okay, I have in front of me the Mamloy's version of the Torah anthology of the book of Genesis, and I just saw an opinion here where it says that some say the reason for the blessing is that the birds and the fish do not carry their young in their womb, but lay eggs in which the embryo must be formed. It is a great wonder that a living thing can come into being in an egg that is no longer part of its parent. God bless them to teach us that everything is directed according to His word.
Beautiful. Well, General, we have about 3 minutes to go. I just want to conclude with this teaching by Rashi, who elaborates on this idea. Why did the Most High tell them to be fruitful and multiply? As I'm quoting Rashi, who was one of the most important commentators on the five books of Moses and Talmudic teachings. That he said that beasts were also in need of blessing for the same reason, namely that people decreased their numbers by hunting them and eating them. Now, that's very interesting, because at this point in the story of Genesis, in the historical depiction of Genesis, there are no human beings. But I think that's a great reassurance from the Most High to us, transmitted to Moses, to us, throughout the generations, that things have been prepared for us, that if we work with the Most High's creation in a symbiotic fashion, not in a destructive, selfish fashion, that we shall be provided for. And with that being said, that we can go with stealth and confidence and utmost faith in the Most High, that there shall continue to be substance, whether it be through the part of the human food chain, whether it be fowl or fish or animals. Of course, we don't want to overindulge in any one of those types of human food, or even in the vegetable and fruit kingdom, but there's a balance. And the fact that he told them to be fruitful, multiply, before, this was on the fifth day, man came into being on the sixth day. And remember that Adam and Eve originally were commanded not to eat meat. And it wasn't until the generation of Noah, which was basically 1,656 years later, that meat and animal and the eating of fish were permitted. Gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. We're about to run out of time on the show. I want to thank everyone who listened or will be listening in the archive version. Hopefully next week we'll go back to, again, the 86th show, or maybe the 87th show. We might do a show in the middle of the week on an unrelated topic, although Torah always relates to all forms of unrelated topics in Torah as one cohesive unit. I want to thank, again, both of you gentlemen, and we're going to end off with a song called Ana B'Koach, which is a Hebrew prayer, which we of Israel say three times a day before our morning, afternoon, and nightly prayer, and even before we go to sleep, basically making a supplication to the Most High that our prayer should be heard on high in order to bring blessings into the world. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you for anyone who's listening or is going to listen. Let us hopefully meet at a future time where our minds are configured on a higher level of consciousness, an expanding form of consciousness with an ever-expanding world. Thank you, everyone, and have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.